Sweet. Good morning, everyone. Good morning to those who are online. Sorry you couldn't make it, but I completely understand. Okay, so this morning we're going to go through and do advanced training. Maybe. There we are. Okay. So welcome or welcome back. We missed you, or yay, you're here for the first time. Wonderful. Okay. Just go over some housekeeping items again. If you have not gotten me your media release or your background check from last weekend, for those of you who aren't here, email them to me. And I think I've got everybody's who's here, so that's not a big deal. Remember to log your training hours on your Vyalant timesheet. I will be sending out an email on Monday that has the electronic version because I forgot to do that last time. So that will be going out on Monday for those of you who want an electronic version. There is paper versions here if you want them. The credit report thing, if you guys want to pull your own credit report to see how it all works, let me know and I will get you the information in order to do that. I did not put that in here for today. And we are here to help others. So if you have questions, please ask for clarification. That's what Keaton and I are here for. We are here to answer any questions you may have. No question is too small or stupid. So please, we want to make sure that everybody is on the same page. Ask questions so we know what we're all doing. Keaton is the site coordinator for Wetoma. I will be the site coordinator for Mid-State on Mondays. And then on Saturdays, Nate and Bonnie will be taking as site coordinators because I will still be the site coordinator for Waupaca and they have Friday and Saturday hours there. So unfortunately, I cannot be at two places at once. So I had to pick and choose. And since Mid-State has people who have done it before, they're going to handle the Mid-State on Saturday and I'll handle Waupaca still. Okay, next. This is a QR code for the short survey to tell us when you would like to get together for a volunteer appreciation dinner. I sent out a link in the email the other day, so you can do it that way. But if you like a QR code and you think that this might be an easier way to do it, here it is. We'll hold it up here for a few more seconds yet. So we're trying to get an idea of when most people would be available. And once I get that date then tabulated, we'll figure out where we're going. We might go back to the same spot we went last year. That was the community room, used to be in Clusa building across from Hirschner's. And probably a potluck again. But we will see how the season goes and what our funds look like at the end. But so we just want to get this started now so people can put it on their calendars to make sure that they can try to get there. Sweet. All right. Next, we're going to just jump right into stuff. So, first thing we're going to talk about is this no tax on overtime deduction. All right. I know we went over this in basic, but just in case some of you didn't watch the basic one, I wanted to make sure we touched it today in advanced because it is kind of a change. Single taxpayers can claim up to $12,500. Joint filers, the maximum is $25,000. Only compensation that exceeds their regular pay is eligible. So Harold, exampled, Harold gets paid $25 per hour. For overtime, he gets paid time and a half. So Harold's only eligible to claim the $12.50 per hour of overtime for his OT deduction. So we don't get to claim the time and a half. We just get to claim the half for the deduction. Taxpayer eligibility, they must have a Social Security number on their tax return. And if married, you must file jointly. We will be asking the taxpayers to bring in their last pay stub of the year in order to aid us in calculating their eligible deduction. Keaton said he has seen that some employers are putting the overtime in box 14, which is wonderful. And he says that the amount that is going in there is only the half rate. It's not the full time and a half rate, it's just the half rate. So we should be able to take what's in that box and use it for the deduction. So it could be reported under box 12 or 14 under other, and then box 12 using code TT. So even if OT is entered under TT on TaxSlayer, it hasn't to this point pulled through to the deduction page. Like I said, they may do an update to make that happen, but while we're starting the first few weeks, everybody should make sure that if there is an overtime deduction that we're going in and we are looking at the deduction page to make sure it's either there or that we have to enter it. Okay, so this is going to be one of those things that we're going to have to just double check all the time. At least until we hear that there's maybe been an update made or something. Okay. It says only overtime required by the Fair Labor Standards Act is eligible. The FLSA does not require employers to pay overtime on Saturdays, Sundays, or holidays. Therefore, OT paid on the weekends or holidays are not eligible for the OT deduction. We had talked about just doing the fact that we were going to just accept whatever it was in overtime this year as the full amount to take. As a Keaton and I had kind of talked, we probably should be asking, do you have an estimate amount percentage-wide of how much this overtime was on weekends or holidays? Right? That would maybe give us a little more fair, accurate assessment to put in there. So, you know, somebody comes in with overtime, we should ask them, I see that you have overtime listed. You know, do you have an estimate of the percentage of this overtime that was for holidays or weekends? And best guess scenario, we're going to have to just go with what they think. So if they say, well, you know, maybe 30% of it I did on weekends or holidays. So we'll make the calculations to figure and subtract that 30% off of that overtime calculation and put it in. And then make a note on your the yellow intake forms. So you do, if you do that calculation like that, make that in the notes section that this is the calculation I did to figure out the overtime, and that's why this number is in there instead of what's on the form. So FLSA also exempts some jobs from overtime. All jobs listed below, if paid OT, would not be able to claim the OT deduction. So, farm workers, movie theater workers, seasonal workers, hotel staff, taxi drivers, and onshore fish workers. Not that we get a whole lot of any of those, but good to know. Any questions so far on the no tax on overtime deduction? No, see here. Nobody's typing a message. All right, cool. Next, tip income not reported to an employer. So, this is if the client received tips that they did not report to their employer, they have unreported tips to include on their tax return. You'll have to add this amount onto the W-2 screen as unreported tips. This will add Form 4137, Social Security and Medicare tax on unreported tip income. If the taxpayer received tips that weren't reported to the employer because they were less than $20 for that month, go to the other taxes, select Form 4137, and also enter the amount there. Okay. If a taxpayer wishes to use their tip log instead of the allocated tips in box 8, leave box 8 blank and report it as unreported tips within the W-2. There's that part. So now this no tax on tips deduction. So your maximum deduction is $25,000. The deduction may not exceed employer or taxpayer's net income if the taxpayer is self-employed. We have decided this year that all tips are going to qualify for this deduction because it's going to be rather difficult to try to sit down and figure out what's what. So it must be in an occupation that customarily and regularly receives tips. There is an IRS published list. We had some printed out, I think. Yes. So if anybody wants a copy of that electronically, let me know and we will get that out. Let's see here. Tips will not pull through to the federal deduction page at this moment. Like we said, if there's an update that might make it work, we'll let you know. But until then, if you have tips that you're needing to do the deduction for, make sure you double check both spots that it's in as tips and then that you're taking out a deduction for them. So this deduction is allowed for an amount equal to qualified tip income received during the taxable year that are included on statements furnished to the taxpayer. The allowable deduction is reduced if the modified adjusted gross income exceeds $150,000, or $300,000 if married filing joint, which we don't have to worry about because we don't go that high with incomes. No deduction is allowed if the taxpayer does not include a valid Social Security on their return. If married, taxpayers must file a joint return to claim the deduction. Qualified tips means cash tips received by an individual in occupations where tips are customary. This deduction is allowed to non-itemizers. Any question on that part? No? Yes? No? Nobody? All right, this is going to be a quick day. So we're going to move on to Schedule C self-employment income. This you will find in your Pub 4012, pages D28 through D41. That covers a lot of your self-employment income. Businesses with inventory, employees, contract labor, depreciation, business use of the home, expenses over $35,000 or a net loss are out of scope. Okay, so we can't do those if any of those things are true. What did you say the dollar amount was? 35,000. You're welcome.
So self-employment income greater than 35,000.
Expenses. They cannot have expenses over 35,000.
So the business use of your home, is that new?
That started last year, I think.
I certainly recall doing one, but
Yeah.
I don't know if you
Yeah, I remember having done some, but yeah, I think last year they kind of limited our Schedule C scope a little differently too. So, if a client is self-employed and they receive a 1099 NEC or a 1099 MISC for their payment, you will need to link that to their form Schedule C. So when you go into the NEC, either before or after you have created the Schedule C, it'll ask you to designate it to an already started Schedule C or a brand new one. So that makes it rather simple. Then when you fill out that form, it'll automatically to add it to the Schedule C. If they received cash payments, when you are in the income section of the Schedule C, click on the link with the three dots and lines next to the amount box, and it'll bring you up a screen where you can start and you can enter more things individually. It's like a notes sheet that will fill into that box. Let's see here. Any 1099 K received does not have an actual 1099 K form, so you'll end up adding that in on the income section of your Schedule C. There is a line that asks for 1099 K amount, which also has the little note box that you can go into. So if they have more than one 1099 K, you can list them out. You're going to want to complete the basic information about your business and the questions about the operation of your business for every Schedule C. Most business expenses are entered in the general business section. If you want more information about Schedule C's, Pub 535 is the publication to look for more details.
Kelly has a question.
All right, let's see here. If a client is self-employed, say as a hairdresser, and receives tips, those tips are not eligible for the tip deduction, right? Because they need to pay Social Security and Medicare on them, right? So what they will do is you still need to pay the Social Security and Medicare on them, So they'll still be counted as income on a Schedule C, but you still should be able to take the deduction for the tips because you add them in normally. If it's a tip income, you add it in for income and that and the Social Security and Medicare, and then you take it off later as a deduction. So they should still be able to take the tips deduction as long as it does not go over their net income. So if you do a Schedule C and they have a it's $200 net income with all of their expenses, and then they have tips to take off, the tips can't be more than that $200. No, because if you add that income in as a as your Schedule C income, it already does the Social Security and Medicare tax because you're paying Social Security and Medicare on all of your income. Right? Okay. Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
Okay.
Because we're going to that way.
Yes.
But is that the right way to do it, or should we do it on about 4137? I don't know.
I wouldn't.
Because
I wouldn't.
that's.
How I updated the new self-employment worksheet this year, I'm having them include tips in their income.
That helps.
Wonderful. Okay. Does that make sense to everyone so far? Yes? Okay. Let's see here. To be in scope, the accounting method must be cash. There could be no inventory, no cost of goods sold, no employees, no business use of home, no depreciation. So you're going to select not applicable for inventory method. All allowable and documented expenses must be reported on a Schedule C. If any deductible expenses are out of scope, the entire return is out of scope and the taxpayer should be referred to a professional preparer. There is no option to disregard allowable expenses. Let's see here. To be deductible, a business expense must be both ordinary and necessary. An ordinary expense is one that is common and accepted in the industry. A necessary expense is one that is helpful and appropriate for your trade or business. An expense does not have to be indispensable to be considered necessary. Taxpayers can deduct the cost of their own education expenses, including certain related travel related to trade or business. They must be able to show that the education maintains or improves skills required in their trade or business, or that is required by law or regulations to keep their licensing to practice. Car and truck expenses. Usually, using actual expense deductions such as gas, repairs, and depreciation is out of scope. So we will use the business miles calculation. You're going to enter a brief description of the vehicle, for example, a 2008 Ford. Business miles are the miles related to the business activity that aren't the commuting miles. For hire drivers who have mileage in between customer pickups can claim the mileage as a business expense. Commuting miles, those are miles that are driven each day from home to the first business location and then driven from the back last business location back home. So those are not business miles, those are commuting miles. And then other miles is like personal things, like you go to the doctor, you run to the grocery store, gas station, things like that. Let's see, car and truck expenses deduction will automatically be calculated using the standard mileage rate. Let's see here. Okay, next page. Okay. Any 1099-K received should be listed separately as a 1099-K in the name of the company it received from. That's what I was talking about on the Schedule C in the income section. There is a line with the box, and then it's got the ability to add the notes, so you can list them all in there and it'll add it all into that box. Let's see here. In order to properly report the 1099-K, you'll be directed to create a Schedule C or pick from one that's already been started. Okay. That's all good. Think we're good there. Any questions on Schedule C? Self-employment income. We do see several of these. They're not huge, but we do see a few. And of course, like I said, if you ever run into a situation that you're not sure of, just ask your site coordinator and they'll come over and help. All right. Schedule D, capital gains and losses. So if you have a 1099-B or sale of made home, that's when we use these. If anybody that comes in has sale or exchange of digital assets, that is out of scope and they will have to go to a paid preparer. We can't touch those. They can have them, they cannot sell or transfer or gift. Right. Let's see here. Enter all capital gains transactions such as sale of stock and loss carry over here. Information regarding sale of stock is found in a 1099-B, proceeds from broker and barter exchange transactions. It could also be a consolidated transaction list is where you'll probably find most of your information. Capital loss carryover worksheets and all of that, if they've been with us before and they have a carryover, that will automatically come forward. If they have one that started this year for previous years, it will be in our system for next year. If they sign the global consent, then any other Vitasite that they go for, that carry forward will transfer. Okay. Otherwise, they'll have to take a paper copy of their return with them. Let's see here. Capital losses that exceed the $3,000 limit, of course, will be put into a carry forward until it is completely used up. Let's see. For securities reported on a brokerage statement as worthless, use the alternate option and worthless for the sold date. Let's say they have at least a dollar, they are not worthless, so they have to be like zero or negative, whatever. Sale of main home. The sale or exchange of a main home must be reported as a capital gain or loss if the taxpayer cannot exclude all of their gain from income. And for the number just went out of my head. I had it. It was $250,000 if you are single, and $500,000 you can exclude if you are married filing joint. It has to be the main home. Let's see here. If they have a Form 1099-S, we do still have to put all of that information into the system. And then if it is excludable, we have to do the deduction to exclude it. So that is the only one where if it comes on that form, we have to put it in because they get a copy of it and they want to see that we're doing something with it. The taxpayer does not have to report the sale of their main home if they qualify and choose to exclude all of their gain and did not receive a Form 1099-S. I think in my personal opinion, it might be a good idea just to put it in anyways and show that they are eligible for the exclusion, just to kind of keep the paperwork all nice and tidy and reported. Generally, if the following two tests below are met, the taxpayer can exclude up to 250 of gain. And if both the taxpayer and their spouse meet the tests and file a joint return, they can exclude up to 500,000. So, test one, during the 5-year period ending on the date the taxpayer sold or exchanged their home, they owned it for 2 years or more, and lived in it as their main home for 2 years or more. So that's test one. And then test two, the taxpayer hasn't excluded gain on the sale or exchange of another main home during the 2 year period ending on the date of the sale or exchange of the home, this one. If the taxpayer has a gain that can't be excluded, it is taxable. Any loss is not deductible. And if the home was ever used for business or a rental or has a reduced exclusion, then the return is out of scope for us. We would have to look that up because I didn't put that in my notes. And I forgot what it was. I read it, but I forgot to put it in my notes. But there is on Pub 4012, D tab D42 through 56 talks about all of these types of things. So it does tell you in there what a reduced exclusion is. You're welcome. Any questions on capital gains, sale of main home?
Last year, and the previous year, there were a fair number of people who had multiple transactions. And you can use the totals
Oh, yes.
that are given. There are places you need to check. So this year, and I don't remember if this is true, if there's transactions with no adjustments in our business page 44. If it's all reported, cost basis and all, and it says reported to the IRS or not.
Yep.
If it's all reported to the IRS, you can just lump them into one, two short-term numbers or two long-term numbers.
That's very helpful.
If they are not reported to the IRS, there is a way to do it. There's a note on D45 that says you use the date of the last sale of the summarized transactions and you check box M, reporting multiple transactions on a single row.
Perfect. Wonderful.
Those are things that have occurred to me in the past.
Yes, because sometimes
Yeah.
we get some of these people in that have they like do day trading for a while. So the being able to put them, not having to list out 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 20 pages worth of transactions individually.
Sometimes it's not them that's doing the thing. It's
Yeah,
their broker.
that's true too.
They receive these things.
So Nate was saying, he didn't have a question. He was saying that you can take, if all of the transactions on the 1099B are reported to the IRS, you can put them as a grand totals in those boxes instead of having to list each one out separately. And then if there are ones that are marked as not being reported to the IRS, you can still do the grand transaction. You'd have to just pick the last sales date of the last one sold, and then you have to check mark box M, to say that you're doing multiple transactions in one group. Did that help? Is everybody good on that? What was the pages you were on again? Yeah. So D44 was if they have it all and it's checked, reported to the IRS.
For the second 45, there's a note on the box outside.
So D45 and D48 for the other method where they're not reported to the IRS, but you're still going to lump them all together and mark box M. Are we good? All right. Now we're going to go to 1099 Rs. Sometimes we get retirement income that does not have a taxable amount determined. So we have to do a simplified method worksheet. So if your client received a 1099-R with no amount in the taxable amount box two, then you should click the link to take you to the simplified method worksheet. You will need extra information such as plan cost at start of retirement, which is the total in the plan, the date of retirement, if it is a joint slash survivor benefit, that means the benefit continues to pay if the retired employee dies. So then you need the ages of the retiree at the time of retirement. And if it's a joint benefit, you add their age also. Okay. You need to know the number of payments they received in 2025 and the amount of the annuity previously received prior to 2025. Oh, well, let's see here. Tax layer calculates the annuitant's age at the start date of the pension. This may differ from the annuitant's age at the end of that year. Let's see here. So you enter the amount that could have been recovered tax-free in prior years, even if not claimed. You look at last year's tax return to find this amount or calculate the amount using the monthly tax-free amount computed by TaxSlayer. For 2025, times the number of months prior to 2025 that they actually received a benefit. And then there's also a box on here now that if they are a public service officer, I think that's what PSO stands for, they can subtract up to $3,000 from a distribution. So there's a box to add that. All of this information for your 1099-R and your simplified method is in your 4012, pages D58 to D64. Any questions on simplified? Oh. Is the taxable amount not determined screened during intake? Yes. So, if they have a taxable amount, a 1099-R is basic. Okay. So, anybody should be able to do a 1099-R if there's a taxable amount in there. If there is no taxable amount in box two, then that makes it advanced. So, yes, our screeners should be paying attention to that.
Yeah, friend, this is Don. I was just checking if the taxable amount is not listed, then the taxpayer needs to bring information on when the annuity started, et cetera. Would the screener then turn them away if they don't have that, or is that something that would get to the advanced and then the tax or the preparer would then have to tell the taxpayer, oh, I'm sorry, we can't continue until you bring, more information about your annuity?
That one, because most of our greeter screener people are not tax law certified, they can't necessarily make that determination. So it may get to a tax preparer, and then you find out that you don't have enough information, and then you may have to send them away and tell them to make a new appointment.
Okay.
So yeah, unfortunately.
No, that's all right. That's just knowing what to expect. Thanks.
All right, anything else about 1099-Rs? Okay, cool. So then this is Social Security payments. Sometimes we get people who come in with their Social Security statement, and down at the bottom in the corner, it's listed several different years with amounts because they've received a lump sum in one year because they've been fighting for a while and they finally got their Social Security. So they've given them back pay. So what we want to do is we want to make sure that we fill out the lump sum benefit or payment worksheet. This is all in your 4012, pages D72 and 73. If a client with a 1099A shows that there are payments in there for other years, you should fill in the lump sum payment worksheet. This could potentially help them keep some of their Social Security benefits from being taxable. You're going to enter the relevant year as shown on the 1099 SSA. If more than 1 year has prior payments, use additional lump sum worksheets. So for every year, a new worksheet needs to be filled out. The drop-down menu is available for prior year filing status. If the prior year return was married filing joint, include Social Security payments received that year by both taxpayer and spouse. Leave the Social Security payments received in an earlier year and/or the taxable benefits reported in a year earlier year boxes empty if not applicable. All other boxes require entries. The calculation won't be correct without the prior year modified adjusted gross incomes. The software would determine total taxable Social Security based on these entries. To calculate modified AGI, add the following income to prior year AGI, which would be any student loan interest deduction, any foreign earned income exclusion. We don't do any of those. Adoption benefits, qualified savings bond interest. So any of those things you would have to add back in order to get your modified AGI. And then enter any tax exempt interest as shown on a prior year's form 1040 or 1040 SR. Any questions on Social Security lump sum worksheet? Yes. Okay, yes.
I didn't pay my account. Maybe you're talking to the computer about it.
What?
You're talking to the computer.
Oh, that's okay. I just turned it a little bit. So, okay.
So Social Security SSA 1099, I know a person pays Medicare, but they didn't get any, it just lists their direct deposit and it doesn't even list their Medicare anymore on it.
Oh, that's odd.
Yeah, I thought it. I had them, my husband we're talking about, so I had them notify them and they said, no, this is right. So is there any disadvantage to that? And this is me asking tax experts.
Well, I mean,
it's not taxable anyway.
No, the only thing would be like, so if you're paying Medicare, right, but it's not showing up on the form, so we don't know and we don't put it in, then when it comes to the, if you were itemizing, okay, you would be missing out on that deduction. And then there might be a state of Wisconsin issue because it's not pulling that in as a medical payment. I took this out of the 4012.
Drug plan on that page now, and I can put in his supplemental because he has a supplemental policy now.
Right.
And I can put those two in.
Huh.
The question I guess I'm really asking is should I put in manually that he did pay that? Because he did. I can put
now, now, is that paid? Was that the amount that was paid for by your employer? Oh, okay. Then that's weird. Okay, so that may be something that we need to just ask all of our Social Security recipients is if they've paid Medicare, because if it's not showing up, that's just weird.
He went online and I read what they wrote back. It's like, no, this is right.
Huh.
So there, to me, there's something going on that we don't know about, maybe? I don't know.
Hmm. Yeah, I haven't heard anything about that. So that's going to be something that we're all going to want to So what was discuss what we're discussing is there was a 1099 SSA that has been sent out where we know that the client has received Medicare, but there was no listing for the Medicare as a deduction on the 1099 SSA. So, and even after getting in touch with the Social Security office, they say that the form is correct.
Does not include that premium. So his SSA 99 shows the correct amount of money he got directly from Social Security, just does not show that he paid
So it's the net, not the gross.
right. And that is what they put on it.
Okay, so this the 1099 SSA has the correct amount in box 5 that does not include what was deducted from Medicare, but it's not listing the Medicare in that side panel where it shows Part D and Medicare and all of that other stuff.
Kind of said some people have Medicare Advantage plans that pay for their Medicare premium.
Oh, and it's not a Medicare Advantage plan. All right, anybody else have any helpful information? Because I don't get Social Security, so this is not something I'm, really privy to. So if that's, see, now that makes things more difficult because I don't necessarily know that a lot of our people would be able to give us the amount that they would pay for Medicare if it's not on there. And we ask them, and they're going to say, yes, they do get Medicare, but then they're not going to know an amount. And now we're going to end up having to send them back how much is
Jennifer,
it? Yeah.
Jennifer, this is Don. There can be some odd circumstances where, let's say, someone is, let's say, they're Medicare eligible at 65, but they're not starting Social Security till, 67, so they're paying Medicare out of their checking account for a couple of years. Then, when they start Social Security, they haven't yet gone in and linked to have their Medicare deducted from their Social Security, so they're still doing kind of a, getting gross Social Security, and then on the side they're paying Medicare out of their checking account until those two get linked up somehow.
And you're thinking that that wouldn't report as Medicare payment on there then?
Right, Social Security wouldn't report, I think, the Medicare payment on the SSA. I'm not sure, but I think that could be one of those circumstances where it's not showing up.
Okay, all right. Well, that makes a little bit of sense, but that just seems odd that they wouldn't list whatever Medicare payments are being made, whether it was pulled out of their Social Security or whether it was paid in. I mean, if you go at a W-2, an employer, they have to put that on there, whether they pay it or you pay it, right? So,
last year, yeah.
Last year the Medicare was on there and this year it's not. Has anybody else gotten a 1099 SSA that's not shown Medicare? When it should have? No? Okay. Well, we'll have to just maybe keep an eye on that. So if you guys run across a client that comes in and they have Social Security but they don't have Medicare, I would ask them, did you have Medicare? Some of them are not going to know. So we'll have to just part of our job is we have to go with whatever the client says, right? It's not our job to do all of the digging for them to find their answers. We have to go with what they give us. So, if they say that they have Medicare and they can give us a number of what they've paid for Medicare and they know it, I would put it in as Medicare paid. If they don't, I would ask them if they want to put it on, or not
Under deductions,
on your itemized deductions as medical,
as health care.
healthcare premiums. Okay, that works for me. Because then it will transfer over to the state. The only issue I'm thinking, most of our people don't itemize because you have to have so much in order to itemize anymore. The only thing I'm thinking of is it might be a help for them for Wisconsin, for medical deduction, but
when you think when you were still on the SSA tax layer, because you can put in that field the other deductions, do we know if that goes anywhere?
It should transfer to your Schedule A
Yes.
as a medical payment. That should transfer anything you put in there for medical on your 1099 SSA should transfer to your Schedule A itemized deductions. And then that number should transfer to your Wisconsin stuff. No, it's just that's not something that I had heard of, so we didn't have a way to handle it. So now we have to try to think of a way to handle it. What are you thinking?
We have one question from Penn. If they are not our client and we do not have their AGI, do we need to send them home for them to get the prior tax returns? And at least in point, that's the way we did it in the past
Oh,
for the
if they aren't our
modified.
clients and we don't have their AGI,
Because you
we
need
need to
that
send
for
them.
the lump sum payment calculation.
We'll have to have a copy of their last year's tax return in order to do the lump sum payment for Social Security.
211 and in our office have told them to bring their last year's.
Especially if they're not one of our clients.
Yeah.
But if the lump sum payments go back more than 1 year, then more
Several.
yeah.
Yeah. So if that runs into the case, we do that like we do with anybody else. We run into a situation where we don't have enough information. We tell the client we need this in order to finish it, send them back with all of their stuff, tell them to take a new appointment and come back. Okay. I think that's going to be the easiest way to do it. Cool. Cool. Clear as mud. Are we all good? Yikes. Ah, got some crazy things in here. Yikes. Okay. Think we're done with Social Security issues? Yes. Anybody else got questions, comments about Social Security? No? Okay. We're going to go to amending a return because sometimes we have to do amendments. Amendment information is in your 4012 tab M, pages 3 through 5. It walks you through how to do an amended return. It's fairly simple. You actually just click on the amended return in your menu. You go in and you just follow it straight through. Don't make any changes until you've clicked start an amended return. Okay. Make your changes after you've done the amended return. Click. It does say that you should have, if we've done the return before, have a copy of that PDF of the original return up so you can fill out some questions. Then, if we didn't do it, they will have to have their original return and all their supporting documents because we will have to recreate it to the original copy first. Before we can go and do an amendment, I like Bonnie and Keaton and I have discussed too that we will leave those returns that were not done by CAP before up to individual preparers on if they feel comfortable and want to recreate and do an amendment. Some do, some don't. If they don't feel comfortable, there might be somebody who does. Site coordinators have that option to do them also if we want. We want to try to help as many people as we can, but if it's a very tedious process and we're extremely busy, we may push them off until later March or April to do the amendment, right? Or even after season if it's just really complicated and So I'm going to be busy with amendments after the end of the season. So that's okay. We can do that. Not a big deal.
Hey, Jennifer, this is Don. Just a quick comment there. I think I almost always put it into two categories. Sometimes there's something that the taxpayer did or didn't do that causes an amendment. Sometimes you can discover that whoever prepared it in a prior year missed something. I'm thinking a lot of times like a homestead exemption or something like that, that you discover as you're preparing it this year. And then I tend to be more like, oh, okay, let's do the amendment right away rather than put them on the list for after the season.
Exactly. If it's something fairly simple that you can do in a you know, reasonable amount of time and not cause a backup, then yeah, I don't have a problem with that at all. It's just when we are a little bit busy, we want to make sure that we keep our flow going because we are appointments only. So we have to try to get it in and done. And at Mid-State, we are very limited on the amount of time that we can be there, especially on Saturdays. So just keep an eye on timings and complexities and your comfortableness with doing those things. And that's that works for me. Anything else on amendments? No. Is there anything else we want to discuss on an advanced level before we start talking about the scenarios? Anybody? Anybody out there? You can unmute and ask a question if you want. Talk, mention something, have a comment. Otherwise, we're going to go right into the scenario. Okay, so advanced scenario one, Joy Sunshine. I was gonna say, I pulled this right out of the test book, so I'm like, oh good, I'll be calling on you then. No, okay, so Joy's husband, Peter, moved out of their home in March of 2023. Joy has had no contact with Peter since he moved out. Joy and Peter are not legally separated. Joy has one child, Valerie, age 10. She will claim Valerie as a dependent on her tax return. Joy is 31 years old. She earned $46,000 in wages and received $50 of interest. She had lottery winnings of $2,000 reported on a W-2G. Joy paid all the costs of keeping up her home. She provided over half the support for Valerie, and they are all U.S. citizens, have valid Social Security numbers, and they lived in the United States all year. Okay, question one. Joy qualifies for head of household filing status. True or false? True, true, true. We all agree, true. We all agree. Follow the tree, exactly. Who qualifies to claim the earned income credit, also known as earned income tax credit? So you could call it EIC or EITC, either one, both are right. Joy, Peter, both Joy and Peter, or neither Joy and nor Peter? Joy. Joy is the consensus. Okay. And Joy is not required to report her lottery winnings as income on her federal tax return. True or false? False. All income goes on the return. Okay. Advanced scenario two. Matt and Megan Summer are married and want to file a joint return. Matt and Megan are both U.S. citizens, have valid Social Security numbers, and they resided in the United States all year with their children. Matt and Megan have two children, Janice, age 8, Jack, age 17. Janice and Jack are U.S. citizens and have valid Social Security numbers. Matt earned $33,000 in wages. Megan earned $21,000 in wages. In order to work, the Summers paid $2,000 to their son, Jack, to care for Janice after school. Matt and Megan provided all the support for their two children. Okay, question one. For which children can Matt and Megan claim the child tax credit? A, Jack, B, Janice, C, both Jack and Janice, or D, neither Jack nor Janice?
B.
We're saying B over here. We're saying Janice. I'm liking B. B sounds good. The Summers qualify for the Child Independent Care Credit. True or false? False. Why would it be false?
They're paying for that.
Because they're paying it to their dependent child to watch their other child, and you can't pay your dependent to and kind of. All right. Is there any questions about anything we've talked about? Does anybody have anything else they want to discuss or mention?
Just to clarify.
To clarify, yes.
The question.
Yes. True.
Not 17 and under.
Under 17. Yes. So the child tax credit, the child has to be under 17 as of December 31st, 2025, in order to qualify for child tax credit.
And I'm sorry. Why the dad couldn't.
To me, why I think that is because it said in the description that Valerie claimed her as a dependent, or Joy claimed her as a dependent, and the other person claims the child as a dependent is the one that's eligible for the credit. Somewhere I read that.
Yeah. I understand that,
but because she's, it told us in the description that she was going to be the one claiming her as a dependent.
So
she provided over half the support to Valerie, so Peter would not have provided half of the support or more.
So the discussion that we are talking about here in the conference room, we're talking about why could Peter not claim Valerie for earned income credit, right? That's what we're asking. All right. And we're saying that because Valerie is claiming her as a dependent, because Joy is claiming Valerie as a dependent and she paid more than half of her support, therefore Peter could not. I do notice that in here it does not specify how much time Valerie is with Joy or Valerie is with Peter. So it doesn't even say if Peter spends any time with Valerie at all. So, so since Joy has no contact with Peter, we're saying that therefore Valerie is not probably spending any time with Peter. So that right there, I think, would also cause it to not be eligible for EIC. I mean, they're not spending any time.
EIC does, I mean, it does say that if you're claiming your them as the dependent, if you're not claiming as the dependent, you cannot be eligible for the credit.
Right.
And can he claim her as a dependent or not?
Peter claimed Valerie as a dependent.
Right. That's the real question, I think.
And it seems like Valerie could be a qualifying relative.
Okay.
I mean, we've seen clients who have disagreement, right?
Right, yes.
And in odd years, Peter gets
divorced they don't talk to each other at all.
Yeah, but they still could have an agreement.
Okay, so the rules in here The rule says married taxpayers who don't file a joint return can claim the EIC only if they had a qualifying child living with them for more than half of the year and either parent lived apart from their spouse for the last 6 months of the year or are legally separated according to state law under a legal separation agreement or a decree of separate maintenance and didn't live in the same household as the spouse at the end of the year. Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Well, see, and then you bring up answers, and I'm like, I thought I knew how that worked, but now I have to go back and double check to make sure that I actually do know how it works, which is why I get out our wonderful little trees and our notes, and that's why we have the 4012, so we can look these things up so we don't have to try to memorize them, correct? Right. So I-4 in your 4012 talks about the EIC eligibility requirements, and there's a note down at the bottom talking about married taxpayers. That is where we're finding that Peter couldn't have claimed Veronica, because they did not live together for at least 6 months. And the child did not live with them for more than half the year. So, Valerie, thank you. Thanks. I knew it started with a V. Oh. Okay. Anybody else out there in internet world have anything that they want to discuss, talk about, include, question? You can unmute yourself and chat. No, yes, no. All right. So I think what we were going to do now is I'm not going to go through the Wisconsin PowerPoint because it's the same one that I did for the basic. It's the same one that is up on our website that you can go and listen to. So if you have questions about Wisconsin, I'm going to let you go there. But Keaton, who has been a wonderful, wonderful addition, okay, has put together a scenario that he is going to go through with everybody. Through TaxSlayer, so we can see how all of these things kind of flow and work. And I know you guys don't have a copy of the scenario with you for you who are online. I will send that out as a PDF on Monday, so or this afternoon, depending on what time we get done. But I will send that out to you so you guys can walk through it on your own if you want to also and see if you come up with the same answers. So that's what we're going to start doing here. In just a sec, Keaton is getting it all set up. This would be a good time for people to take a pee break if you want to. Ooh, we're going to talk about student loan debt first.
Yeah.
Sweet. Okay. Let's do a 5-10. Let's do a 10-minute pee break, everybody. Get up, stretch your legs, get something to drink, get some snacks, go potty. Yes. Oh no. I can make more coffee. I'm turn off
the and we are going to resume around 11:25.
Yeah, we will come back in 11:25.
Well, let's other people drink more coffee or find